Hi everyone, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Today my guest is Alan Rose. Alan Rose is a cartoonist who used to work for the Australian Basketballer, amongst others, doing cartoon strips for the NBL and about the NBL and about basketball. The one of which I came across was called The Hacks, and it was in an old episode of the old edition of the Australian Basketballer. Really nice guy, really funny guy, really interesting guy, and yeah, it's really nice to get the impressions of the NBL and basketball from a cartoonist perspective. We often get an impression of the game from fans and analysts and former players and current players, but it's nice to hear it from a cartoonist perspective and what they're looking at when they look at sports. Al's got a lot of work out there, and it's definitely worth checking out. He's got work at thefabulousbushpigs.com. That's a comic strip of his, and then more of his greater work at alanrosegraphics.com.au. And if you're looking to get a caricature done for a sports team or a business or something, definitely jump on to alanrosegraphics.com.au. That's Alan with one L, A-L-A-N. And have to have a look at his stuff. You can get something really fun done for a birthday or a work colleague, whatever it may be. But as for that, this is Alan Rose. Enjoy. My first question, Al, is do you refer to yourself as an illustrator or a cartoonist? What's your sort of title?
Look, I consider myself a cartoonist. I do a bit of caricature, and I do basically everything that's involved with cartooning. But I do particularly now. I originally in my career I was a layout artist, which was the way I made my living was laying out magazines and newspapers.
Okay.
And I freelanced as a cartoonist and did cartoons for whatever publication I was working with, but it tended to be on the side. But I was always preparing to be. I always wanted to be a full-time cartoonist. Yeah.
And you had an affinity for cartooning, or a natural aptitude when you were younger, or did it sort of blossom?
Look, I had I used to just draw a lot, you know. And mm-hmm. I think basically that there were when I look back at my old early days at school and stuff, there were people that were much better drawers than me. But mm-hmm. I just kept going, and I wanted to make a thing of it. I had probably in my mid-teens and stuff, I had bad asthma when I was at school, sort of the later years of school. So I did tend to spend a lot of my holiday periods just sitting at home and drawing, and not being able to go out and stuff, really, or not being able to do very much physical activity. But so that may have reinforced it a little bit.
And did you find yourself drawing? That was caricature and cartooning. Always did people. Is that what you draw mostly, or landscapes, or a bit of everything?
Well, look, I specialise in sort of sporting. All my publications that I've worked for have had a sports element to it. So I sort of got over the asthma thing, and became a bit of a sports nut. And I knew a lot about sport, and thought that was a good way of doing. Of learning, a good way, topics to be involved with, really.
Right. We'll jump back to something. So you had a sort of a like for it and a want to pursue it as a vocation. Did you study anywhere at all?
I sort of thought early on that probably cartooning wasn't going to be a full-time mm-hmm. career or a very lucrative career. So I did graphic design at RMIT.
Okay.
And I did 3 years initially, and finished the second year, then went out and became a cadet artist with the Melbourne Herald newspaper.
Yep.
And they put me through the final year of the graphic design course over about 2 years or something like that.
And what sort of time frame is this? What year?
Well, this was about. I started doing the course in about oh, I think about 75, 76, 75, and then I went and joined the Herald in 77. And then I worked and did a little bit of travelling. I had a small cancer when I was 23, so wow. I left the Herald and just did a spent a year travelling around Canada and stuff, really. So
okay, neat. And you took to Canada. Do you like it?
No, I loved it. It wasn't terribly well planned. I just decided. I wanted to get away from everything and have a year off. So I basically just bummed around in Canada for a year and did a little bit of caricature and cartooning. I used to do caricature of in my high school. I used to do little caricatures in my my little school diary and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. So I was always, you know, getting caught drawing in my economics book and that sort of thing.
Yeah, can be trouble. And did you sit on the sort of like on the street and do caricatures of people passing by and things? Did you? Is that in Canada?
Not really. No. I did. I used to go around and there was. At one stage, I was living in a youth hostel that was 4 kilometres down a fire trail in the bush,
okay.
And in the forest. And we used to go and have. It was past the Banff Springs Hotel, and I would walk the 4 kilometres to Banff. I would get on the bus. I would go round to a place called Canmore, about an hour's thing.
Yep,
on the bus.
I know Canmore. Yeah.
Oh yeah, and then I would get I'd get out there and I did caricatures, full colour caricatures of pub owners and that sort of thing.
All right.
I would actually draw them actually in the so I'd have to, actually in this youth hostel by kerosene lamp and stuff because it was a it was a really long way to actually go and do caricatures, so it wasn't really sort of financially that good, but it was just I did that and I got into a I got some regular editorial cartoons into the Banff Crag and Canyon and that sort of thing, so I was just basically doing stuff along the way.
And that year in Canada, was that inspired by something like a book like On the Road or just your own device?
No, it was just a place I decided that I wanted to go to. I gave myself a year, which was probably way too much, really, but I gave myself an open-ended thing for a year, and so I went basically across Canada, went to New York, and, it was just this sort of running around, really, but I don't think I found out a lot about American and Canadian cartoons. I kept an eye on what was going on there, but I don't think I promoted my career very much.
And you said you noted the difference between Australian cartooning and American and Canadian. What is the difference?
When I say that I know the difference, there was a very distinctive style. I mean, I was over there in about 80, 81, mm-hmm. So it was going back a long way, and there's still a guy called Terry Mosher who was doing cartoons in that era, but they tended to be a lot of cross hatching and an awful lot of work, where I think a lot of the Australian cartoons were a lot simpler.
Okay.
And they were very the ones that I particularly liked anyway, and that I followed had very finicky styles and an awful lot of work put into them.
I see. Going back to your studies, so you're studying sort of graphic design or layout. Did you find the 3 years there? Did you find it all tedious, or you found it really informative at RMIT?
No, I found it very good. Really, I just unfortunately I didn't actually. I went back in. I think it was 85. I think I went back to try and finish the year after the course. After I'd been working, I only had about 3 subjects to do, and so I missed out on a year's pay to do this. And the guy still failed me on life drawing because I guess I probably drew big heads and little bodies and
more cartoon.
Yeah.
And what? And I can only imagine, what did sort of graphic design and layout look at that time compared to now? Are you still quite current as what the crossover generationally?
Well, look, there's been a revolution in how these publications have been obviously printed. From when I was there, when I was a cadet at the Herald, there was huge rooms with hot metal machines, which, you know, as they would type out the type for the thing, it would push out little bits of metal that would be put into trays, and then that would be taken down to the printers, and they would all be inked, and then all the pages would be printed. And obviously, the whole thing's been streamlined now with computers and sub editors and journalists can basically do everything from writing the words to doing the layout and everything themselves.
Do you miss that sort of theatre of the day, or do you quite enjoy the streamline of modern time?
Oh, no, look, I prefer, from my own perspective of working, I prefer the modern day thing. I've just been hanging out for I work with a Cintiq now, and a drawing tablet from Wacom, which you can actually draw on the screen.
What's that called again, sorry?
It's called a Cintiq.
Okay.
It's a Cintiq, I think.
Okay.
And it's a drawing tablet where you can just draw straight onto the screen. You don't actually have to, the Wacom tablets in recent history have been where you draw on your table. You have it on sitting on the table and you draw and the thing comes up on the screen.
Right.
Whereas you'd actually see you can actually look at what you're drawing with these. And this is what I've been waiting for all my life, I think.
Yeah, well, that's neat. Going back to some of my questions from my email, so you sort of had a natural aptitude for it. Are there any books that grabbed you that you read or that were good how-to books on cartooning?
I looked at a lot of, I've got banks of books here myself that I've got on how to draw. I mean, I used to do a lot of, in my early days, obviously, I used to trace and copy a lot of Marvel stuff, and I still love the action movement and that sort of thing that I used to get with those sort of things. And there was a book recently that was on caricature, which was a fantastic book on caricature by the guy who now does the mad movie satires.
Okay.
And his name's Tom Richmond, and he had a book on caricature where he describes how he manipulates the face and how he stretches, when he does a caricature and stuff.
Right.
If it's a long, thin face, or if it's a long face, then he makes it, he exaggerates the thinness of it and exaggerates the longness. So it's like it's all part of a, like a piece of plasticine or something. Whereas, if you make one bit longer, the other bit gets thinner, sort of thing.
Right. And did any books, like sort of fiction books, help shape your drive to become a cartoonist? Or did you see someone you wanted to emulate on television or something?
I don't know about books, really. I've always loved cartooning and always loved looking at cartoons. Mm. One of my heroes has been, at the moment I'm doing a cartoon strip called The Fabulous Bush Pigs, which I've sort of got to the stage where I can basically do what I want to do rather than, doing what I, just doing every job that came in. I can actually pick and choose. And so I've got my own little cartoon strip, and I used to follow a guy called Murray Ball that used to draw a cartoon strip called Footrot Flats.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which was a New Zealand cartoon strip, and I used to love that and copy that. And I don't know about any books or novels. I mean, I did when I was doing my course, I was really taken by the book 1984, and that had a there were lots of novels that had a big effect on me doing graphic design and that sort of thing.
Right.
So I did a little bit of work for advertising agencies, which I consider probably more normal graphic design. But I was I became an A-grade artist with the Herald and Weekly Times, and so I basically spent most of my graphic career working with publications and being a publication designer.
Neat. You were saying you're working on a comic strip. What's the process of kind of like writing a comic? Obviously, you have to work on the design of it, but you've only got so few words you can do and so few frames, so depending upon the length. Is there a way that you go about that, or an instruction that you could give?
Sure. Yeah. Look, I basically do mainly you know, three panel or double decker strips and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. So I've got about 400 cartoon strips done, but I'm just in the process of turning them into four or five page comics.
Yep.
You know, so they're sort of four page comics and doing that sort of thing. So that's a little bit more of a challenge because you can make your drawings bigger and that sort of thing.
But, right.
When I do a cartoon strip, I sort of basically get an idea, which I think's funny, and then just work out how I can get to that result, how I can have that as my, you know, the funny bit will be probably the final, usually the final panel, but not always, but and work out how I can get to that panel, and then if I want to do a series of cartoons, I'll think, well, okay, that was funny, but what would have happened just before that, or what would have happened just after that, and then I can sometimes milk a cartoon idea, one idea, for about 10 or 12 different cartoons.
Nice. Well, the one I want to ask you about is the one I found recently in an old copy of the Australian Basketball. It's called The Hacks. Do you remember The Hacks?
Sure, yeah. No, I remember The Hacks.
How did you come up with The Hacks, or what caught you?
I was doing a little cartoon strip. I was playing squash at the time, and I used to do a little. I started doing a little cartoon strip called The Hacks, which was about this fat guy and his wife, trying to be sort of thinking of themselves as top sportsmen and stuff, and really mm-hmm. being quite hopeless. And then I just changed that idea, or changed it round to a basketball team, and had the same main character at the front, but then put in a Rastafarian
yep.
character and a tall Rastafarian character, and use them as and basically did the same thing where I was basically they were just people struggling to try and be any good at sport, really.
Right. And basketball, how did basketball get on your radar?
Well, I used to play basketball. I have mm-hmm. sort of a funny story there where we made, when I was at school, we made the finals, and the coach actually hadn't been prepared for us to make the finals because we were actually miles in points behind everybody else, but because no one else had any high points, we managed to scrape in and make fourth place. And so we only ended up with five guys who were eligible to play. And
right.
So that was, and they, three of those guys got fouled off in the first half. So the second half, it was just me and this other guy playing
oh, wow.
a whole other team. And so I used to love playing basketball, mm-hmm. but I never got to any sort of professional. I never
sure.
got to any great standard with it. But I started doing. I wanted to do sports cartooning, and I got
yeah.
in contact with the Australasian basketballer and did some caricatures and stuff around that. Sort of that period around about the 80s,
yep.
I suppose, when basketball was big.
Yep, that sort of, early, to be honest, from that early 80s all the way through the early 90s, really, is when it's pretty big. Does your involvement span that long?
Well, there was probably fairly, I can't remember the actual amount of time, but I think it would probably have been six or seven years. It was really only, like a few caricatures when they wanted one. I got a fairly regular caricature into
okay.
the Australian Basketball, but
yep.
I can't remember if it was monthly or maybe it was...
Was monthly. I've got an issue that says here February to March, so I can only assume it's monthly. Or bi-monthly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's right. No, but there were just some fantastic characters around that time. You know, there was a guy called Fisher that played for the Western. There was an American guy who played
Perth Wildcats. Scott Fisher.
Scott Fisher. That's right. Yeah, there was Scott Fisher, and there was Leaping Leroy Loggins.
What drew you to Scott Fisher? What did you find interesting about him?
He was just a very strong player, and he was, and they were doing particularly well. So there seemed to be a lot more advertising about these guys in those days, and I think he was an American import, but he was a white American import.
He was,
a little bit strange for
still is.
That period.
Yeah,
well, it probably is. But that's right. They sort of I was particularly I particularly loved the Melbourne guys Gaze, and I also met just recently happened to meet Bradkey.
Mark Bradkey.
I happened to meet him in the local local chicken shop the other day. And it's just amazing how big those guys are.
Yeah, I think they're bigger then than they are now. I mean, Scott Fisher is stupidly strong. He doesn't look it on the old TV footage. But, I remember, because I'm originally from Perth, I remember seeing him around the traps, and his shoulders and arms were just so physically strong. He was incredible. Even when I knew him as a coach of the Wildcats, when he would have been he would have been 40 or 50 maybe, probably younger, but he was just so strong. A guy like Vlahov, Andrew Vlahov was very big. Mark Bradkey, I can only imagine, was huge.
Yeah, well, Mark Bradkey was with the Boomers. I think he was the lead, the centre for the Boomers. So he was absolutely enormous, really. And it's only when you stand beside these guys that you realise just how. And they're not just tall, A guy like Bradkey was like he was a normal shaped person, but he was just big in every way, really. But that was the thing about Scott Fisher too. He was really stacked, wasn't he?
He was just strong. He was just a really strong human being. And the thing about Bradkey is, as well, is that he played tennis originally, I think, and then transferred to basketball, which is, that physique is probably not befitting tennis. Oh, maybe it is. But he was super talented. You saw a lot of guys like that in that time of the NBL who were kind of a pro at one sport and then drifted to basketball later in life. I don't know if that's added to the game at all. But with your cartoons, you said that you got work with the Australian basketball. Is that something where you kind of hustled a little bit and contacted them and did some free work for them and they picked you up, or they were only too eager to sort of have you contribute?
No. Most of my freelance work was me chasing it up. I would just chase up all the sporting magazines and, I was constantly trying to get into tennis magazines. That's basically a lot of my freelance stuff was chasing. You would actually do the chasing
make phone calls, or you'd actually draw some sketches and go into their office, or how did that work?
I'd take sample. I'd ring up initially and have a chat with them, and then take in some samples of work that I'd done, and sometimes take in a page of theirs and sort of say that this could be
slide in here.
Even now when I did the Fabulous Bush Pigs, I rang practically every newspaper in the country. Every regional newspaper. The Fabulous Bush Pigs is a country about a band of bush pigs playing country and western music. So it's sort of like I was aiming it particularly at the country places, because the city places are sort of more or less dropping their strips. So
it seems that way.
What
do you put that down to? Why the drop in?
It's basically, I think, the internet's basically killing newspapers and stuff. I think it'll be the I think newspapers will play a very small role in future, but I still see a big future for cartooning with the internet and with digital work. I still sort of see that it'll have a big part to play, because people will still want material for their papers and that sort of thing. But I rang every newspaper in the country and basically ended up chasing little independent newspapers because the big papers like APN and those sort of things weren't taking newspapers or weren't taking strips and that. So it was, I was basically just trying to find my own little niche.
All right. I was got out of my email here. Going back to the NBL, your thoughts on the years you were involved. So you say you were there from sort of the early 80s for 6 or 7 years thereafter?
Yeah.
And that was sort of the heyday of it. When you're sitting side, would you sideline at games and watching guys to get inspiration for caricature, or you mainly watched on telly? Or?
No, I basically looked at magazines and stuff. I do a lot of AFL caricature and stuff these days. I do caricature and stuff when I sit at the grounds. I just do them from I look at them from to get the characters out of an iPad or out of the footy record and just and do their caricatures and that sort of thing. But I've done a little bit of live stuff for parties and that sort of thing, but most of the stuff I do for sports caricature and stuff is basically from photos. And, we're very hard to get people, and it was probably the same in the old days, except I'd be looking at magazines and books instead of the internet. So
of course,
sort of changed getting your reference, really.
And so with what was I going to say? Yeah, you had that book. Who you like? What was the author of that book again?
Your caricature book.
Yeah.
Tom Richmond.
So you had his inspiration for how you draw characters. Is there anything you especially look for and try and exaggerate, or you look for a sort of a persona or a feeling, or what are you searching for?
I'm particularly interested in the face. Usually with a caricature, say, of a sporting person, you can get a general feel for what they're like, so then you exaggerate that. Then you get some of these footballers who are particularly aggressive, and you make them look even more aggressive. But when it comes to the face and stuff, I tend to, what I used to do is I used to get a scrapbook, and I would get all the pictures of the politicians and put them on one side, and then in the other page I'd have all the caricatures and stuff that people had done, particularly John Spooner in the Age, and Paul Harvey, who's a sports caricaturist in Melbourne. I used to put their caricatures up and get and just basically just started to get an idea for what they exaggerated and how, what a normal face would look like, and then how their face varied. It might only be in a fraction. It might only be that their chin was slightly longer than you would think of the normal face.
Right.
You would exaggerate that, So that was my main thing, was looking at how what things were sort of slightly, if their mouth was fairly a little bit small than what you would call normal, then I would make that a lot smaller. And so there was a lot of exaggeration with that, really.
And when you say you used to put caricatures up, is there an element of sort of Picasso, good artist copy, great artist steal, or are you trying to differentiate yourself as well?
You mean copying other people's work?
Yeah, or not so much copying, but getting that inspiration and seeing what they do. And then when you're looking at someone else's caricature, are you looking at what they do for inspiration, but also kind of how you're going to differentiate yourself in your design?
I sort of look at it as inspiration. I sort of find that your own style just automatically sort of comes out. When you try and copy someone, that your own sort of style sort of tends to I don't know why, but it's just your own sort of what you're used to doing and the way you the materials you use and the probably where you start with your caricatures. Some people would start just drawing the nose and that sort of thing, whereas I tend to try and get a good head shape and a little bit like manga, where they use the brain and the lower sort of jawline. I tend to try and get a good idea of that. A lot of my early caricatures and ones that I do for private people are almost portraits, really. They're not terribly exaggerated, because people are too scared to have caricatures done of their family and stuff, and to have them being rejected or causing family feuds and stuff. So most of the stuff, that's why some of my favourite caricatures are the basketball ones, because they were sportsmen and you could just basically. I love the leaping Leroy Loggins one that I did for that one, and there was the three guys who went to the West. There was Pinter or something? There was
Tiny Pinter.
Tiny Pinter. There was another guy, and then there was a small little guy I can't remember his name now, but his son is playing now, I think.
Mike Ellis.
No,
he's West Australian.
Ricky
Grace? No, hang on. Oh, James Crawford. He was from the Hobart Teddy Devil. He was big.
He was the other guy. There was James Crawford, Tiny Pinder, and this guy who was...
Cal Bruton?
That's the one, Cal Bruton.
Okay. Well, they're three of the game's best. They're great.
Yeah, well, I had one of them going to the West, and they all had, sort of cowboy.
Yeah, sure.
And they all had the guns and Western, the three guys going to the West. I think the three of them all went over to Perth at the one time.
And where can I find your work on the NBL stuff? Is that up on your website or anywhere?
Yes, I have got a website which has got about me page.
Yep, that's the alanrosegraphics.com.au.
That's the one. Okay. And that's got most of it's more recent sort of stuff.
Yep.
It's really that about me that has a little bit of stuff about the basketball thing. But the more recent ones tend to be sort of little black and white caricatures that I do with the football, and full colour ones that I do for private clients. So there's a limited amount of colour. I do a little bit of colour on the ones, but obviously because I'm just doing them at football matches and stuff, they're not highly finished, really.
Yeah. How long does it take? Let's say you just draw a caricature of a player, just full standing, A4 size, sort of standard. How long does something like that take you to go from idea to sketch to draw to colour? How long does that normally take?
If I was going to do a highly finished caricature, mm-hmm. which I do for my private caricatures, I'd probably spend about an hour or two doing a rough, and then email the rough off to the people and get their okay. And and then they come back with a few changes, and I'll change that and send back another rough, and then do the finished art. But I would think that probably it would probably take the best part of a day or two, probably 2 days, I guess. A day to do the finished art if I'm putting a lot of detail into it. And sort of hand painted. They're sort of hand painted, those ones. The computer digital ones tend to be a little bit quicker because the process is a little bit more streamlined, and you're not mucking around with paints and things, really.
I'm looking at the fabulous Bush Pigs on your website now. Is that graphically done or with the paint?
no, that's computer done. I draw the strips in pencil in mm-hmm. a book, and sort of a 8-2 size book, mm-hmm. Or probably A3, I guess. It was a little bit bigger than A3, but then scan that into the computer and do the rest on the computer. So I have a template set up. So
I understand.
The actual shape of it is I just bring the rough in and bring it into the template, and so all the obviously the, you know, the name, the fabulous bush pigs, and
yep.
the borders and all that sort of stuff are all manoeuvrable around.
Of course,
I can manoeuvre them around, and they're all sort of pre-set up.
And what program is that you use?
Look, it's just your normal Photoshop, but I use a Mac, and I use the best Photoshop I can get. I do a little bit, not very much, but a little bit with Procreate on the iPad. But I get a little bit frustrated with because I sort of know the Photoshop, what I need to know. I know backwards, and I can sort of use all the tools and stuff without having to muck around thinking about them. I prefer to just get into the drawing bit without mucking around too much.
And I'm looking at your signature. Obviously, cartooning, big part of it is the signature. Did you put any thought into your signature, or is that just a natural one?
No, that's just a sort of a natural one. I use Al Rose as against Alan. And I use Al Rose as my signature, mm-hmm. and I've started putting the fabulous bush pigs. I've started putting a little flower into the strip, and there's a sort of a hidden little flower. And Jeff Hook, who passed away last year, he used to put a little hook in his, he was famous for putting a little hook in his drawings, and I said, would you mind if I hit a little rose in there? And he said, no, that's okay, he didn't worry about it.
Cool.
So I put a little hidden flower in the strip cartoons.
Neat. I'm just going to think what else I've got here. Here's one. It is quite an abstract question, but I'll ask it nonetheless. We get a lot of people's perspective on sports. We get fans' perspective, and we get analysts and stuff. When you're watching a game, and irrespective of the cartoons, when you're watching a game, what do you just find yourself naturally driven to or drawn to? Is it sort of the players, or is there a storyline you like, or the crowd, or the excitement? What is it that does it for you, the sport?
I think sort of sometimes you tend to get a feel for it. You get a mm-hmm. feel for what, that one team's starting to overtake the other. You know, you start to get a feeling that, one team's just starting to take over, and that they're going to be the winners. You know, they might be even be a fair way behind, but you just get a feel for the game that they've got the upper hand. So it gets to be sort of a bit of a general sort of thing. A lot of football that I watch, it's a bit hard to be too, especially at the MCG, it's very hard to see what's going on the other side of the ground. So it's quite often hard to, and quite often I'm sitting there doing caricatures. So I'm sort of basically half watching, really. So, I do like to get an overall feel
for it.
But AFL's a very, a very loosely, the rules are very loose and changing, so it can be a very frustrating game to watch sometimes.
Sometimes it can go. I think basketball's the same way. If you really look at it, one's grass, one's wood, both sort of, one's a square, one's an oval, but that idea of that egalitarian play where everyone can pass, everyone can shoot, everyone can score, everyone has to defend, I think they're very similar in that way, and they can result in some, NFL football normally plays to a finish, whereas AFL and basketball, sometimes that doesn't always happen.
Well, that's right, and I think they both have sort of very umpires' interpretation
yep.
a lot about the rules and that sort of thing. That there can be a sort of different interpretations from similar situations from from the umpires, really.
Yeah. We'll quickly go back to the NBL. So do you watch the NBL much now at all?
Well, I take an interest in it. I sort of take it, but I particularly find that a lot of the chopping and changing around of the teams tends to I tend to lose more and more interest. I still had a little bit of interest in when they had the Northern Tigers recently.
Yeah.
But, so then, as soon as they start changing to changing and combining teams and you sort of you tend to lose your connection with it, or the connection you have with that team. And I also find that it's not it doesn't seem to be as big as it used to be.
And it's not.
The players don't seem to be as well advertised, or they're not spoken about quite as much. I mean, obviously the big ones like Bogut and these guys, and then the guys who make the American things are household names. But generally, I sort of find that, if you ask me to name who was in the Melbourne basketball team at the moment, I'd be really pushing, except to say that I think Chris Stansky might be part of the coaching thing.
He was not anymore.
The players, I wouldn't have much of an idea who was in there at all, really.
My then question is, so obviously what many would consider the golden era is sort of when you were working with the NBL. What separated then from now? What were the players, what was different about them, or what was different about the way they were advertised or shown?
I think there was way more personality. There was a lot more there seemed to be a lot more interest in them. I mean, they seemed to I think the particularly the media took a lot more interest
why do you suppose that was?
I don't know whether it was just sort of like the starting off of the basketball, and whether they whether it was just starting out, and they took them a little while to sort of work out how many people were interested in following basketball. But it also sort of seems to me that the characters were bigger. You know, they just sort of seem to be more. There seem to be slightly larger than life characters and stuff. You know, and they sort of. But maybe that was just the media building them up. I don't know, really.
Or just the times. I think that comment could be made about a lot of sports where guys are quite reserved. I think, just sort of fearful of their image or commerciality or whatever it may be. But as far as players and being greater characters, you just don't see it. You still see it, but certainly not as much.
I think there's a lot more. It's like in the AFL that they're so media savvy and they're so controlled about what they say, that they basically get up there and don't say anything, really. It's all sort of, you don't sort of find them, having quite the freedom to just say whatever they liked in the old days, sort of say, that they didn't like someone and they just go ahead and say they didn't like them.
Yeah, well, I mean, my frustration, I do this podcast and I do reach out to a lot of people, and I sometimes I get places and sometimes I don't. And with players currently in the game, they can be a little bit hard to get a hold of. They're quite sort of very selective about who they speak to and certainly what they say.
Yeah, I think they're heavily. I mean, they're so well paid. I guess I don't know about the basketballers, but the footballers and stuff are so well paid that they don't want to sort of end up getting fines losing points by saying something that's not everything's got very politically correct these days. You know, in the old days, they used to, you know, they used to be, I think basketball had it, you know, they were big guys and they were, you know, and they, you know, they threw their weight around a bit. And
I think also the effect, the Michael Jordan effect, I mean, he was sort of very popular around the, I guess, the early 90s and all the way through to the late 90s. I think that factor, and also the NBA not being accessible, the greater league in America, before there was not the coverage. Now, you know, you can log into the internet, you can watch every game live, replayed, highlights, everything. Whereas before, perhaps not so much, so that people gravitated towards the Australian game.
Yeah, I think it used to be televised, which is always a free to air, plus,
yeah.
Isn't it? Really,
yeah.
So if it's free to air advertising or free to air, and particularly if it's on the commercial channels,
yeah.
where people and the commentators and that, they're always blowing up these sports and making them exciting I think that's probably the biggest. Biggest loss that Australian basketball's had in the last 20 years, I would think.
The other one that people point to is it moving from a winter sport to a summer sport. Some people think that was a bad move. I've never quite seen the basis for that, but what do you think? That happened in the late 90s, I think 98.
Oh, okay.
And it moved from winter. So it used to be sort of played alongside the AFL. It used to be on 7, and then it moved to summer and moved to Channel 10. And, you know, it was still very popular for a while, but then kind of had its lean years in the early 2000s. But I don't know if you have any thoughts.
Yeah, no, well, I probably thought you would think that putting it away from competing with the AFL would be a good move. But, I guess it sort of depends on, you know, I guess summer, winter, you've got a bit more of a captive audience, particularly in Melbourne, you know. You've got people wanting to go out and see, particularly indoor sporting events, you know. It's like a...
It's an active country. In the summer, you know, everyone's out doing something or going somewhere. It's not sort of the ideal place for indoor sports. So maybe there's something in that.
Yeah, there might be. Yeah. I think basketball is still very popular in the lower levels and stuff. It's a little bit like I used to play squash, and squash was one of the top three or four, sporting
participation
in the country
sports.
As occupation sports, but it just wasn't a TV type
commercial. Sport. Yeah, there is that jump. Basketball's still very popular from a participation level. It just hasn't and it is still watched well, but there are a number of leagues out there, so the NBL, you know, has to find its place. But it seems to be certainly doing better now. It's on the upswing.
We went to to see our relatives up in Queensland. One of our relatives is has got a Fijian background, and he's a very big boy, and he. Mm-hmm. He was playing. He got close to playing for the Cowboys, I think there, or whatever it is up mm-hmm. on the north coast there. But a lot of the family came down. They came down, and one of their daughters was playing in a competition. And we went out to the basketball stadium out in the Dandenong sort of area, mm-hmm. and it was incredible how many people were there. It was just it was a big competition, but it was all sort of underage basketball, and it was there was a huge crowd there. I hadn't had much contact with basketball besides that, and was amazed at how many people were there.
Yeah, I think. I mean, the other thing is as well is AFL and NFL, NBL. It's an entertainment, and there's a lot of entertainment out there, a lot of films, a lot of television, a lot of easily accessible entertainment, and really, as much as it is a sport, it boils down to entertainment, and finding your place within that entertainment sphere is where it's going to work itself out. I'm sure it will.
Well, yeah, and I guess probably the basketball's had the thing where there's been just a lot of the other sports have... have risen so much. I mean, the netball's been an incredible increase, hasn't it, really? You know, you sort of think that the there's almost more... maybe it depends on how the boomers are going. I don't know whether that's...
We'll see. Watch this space. I know Melbourne's just acquired a second team. They've got Melbourne United, and now they've got South East Melbourne, who are now the Phoenix. So both Melbourne teams used to be the Tigers and the Magic. They're now the United and the Phoenix. So you talk about changing teams and things. It is what it is.
I always followed, but, you know, when you have a name like the Tigers, it's just a, you know, you just follow it because you've followed it, you know, probably ever since Ted Gaze and Brad Key and those sort of guys playing in it, and they were all sort of household names, but it's just a, you know, it's a little bit hard to get involved with the United thing because you've got no, got no connection with it really, and a lot of the players are, just a little bit unknown to me really. Even the Olympians and stuff, they're not sort of household names in Melbourne like they used to be.
The other thing I wanted to quickly ask you about with sports, I've really seen a veer away from cartooning or cartoons in the logos. I mean, you look all across the NBL, most of them are just a standard block writing. And then a logo that's actually quite serious. I remember before there used to be a little bit more, no, it was never really silly, but it was more a little bit more room to play with as far as, you know, animal designs and things. Have you noticed that for yourself?
Look, I haven't noticed that really. I haven't been sort of in contact with a lot of sporting logos, but I know that they used to have, you know, they'd always have sort of like a cartoon tiger or a cartoon bomber or something, and I don't know whether I still do logos and stuff for junior football teams, and I've done some cartoons for basketball teams, you know, sort of underage basketball teams, where I've caricatured the team and or the coach, I'll do a logo and design a cartoon character for the logo, but I've got no idea whether that's whether that's still used a lot or whether that's they're just one-offs, but they seem to be still used at sort of underage level.
Maybe I'm off base, but I just remember. How are you about to say?
I was going to say that I just, but as you say, when I think about logos for the major teams, you know, the sort of the Magic and stuff, they're usually like some, you know, sort of basic, a ball design or something designed on the basketball or something, or or on the ring or something. But maybe there's not so much animals. But the AFL tends to have you have a lot of cartoon animals and stuff when they design their logos.
Yeah, one thing I've always been shocked about the NBL, and to be honest, sports across Australia, I mean, most clubs are so old that their logos are entrenched and they're not going to change, which is fine. But like we say, the Melbourne Tigers. You know, it's not an Australian animal, you know, and we've got the Perth Wildcats. They're an introduced species. Brisbane Bullets, no one owns a gun. Canberra Cannons. I would love to see a bit of a thing, because I've always thought Melbourne should have been the Miners, as in MYNA, the bird, the grey miner, the native one. You know, that's a great Melbourne Miners. I think that's a great name. You could do something great with a logo and the colours of a grey, black and yellow.
I suppose they do tend to want to have sort of fairly, aggressive predator type animals, don't they? Really, you know, they don't often have, except for the Sydney Swans,
The Brisbane Bears had a koala for a while. It was one of the more docile animals. But yeah, you're very right. It's normally a foreign, violent animal.
Yeah, for something aggressive and fairly, usually a tiger or a lion and stuff. But I guess we don't have quite that. We don't have that many sort of aggressive animals in Australia, I guess. But as you say, it's much better that they have. I guess the international teams all have, names that are Australian, don't they? Really?
Yeah, they do. But you know, the Emus are the under-19 basketball team, I think, the men's, and the Boomers are obviously a group of kangaroos. So there's a lot. I don't think any of the logos are bad or anything, but certainly I think there's a bit of a missed opportunity to do something really fun. But who knows, maybe in the future.
Yeah. Well, that's right. I mean, Melbourne United is a fairly sort of,
rather name, pedestrian, yeah.
I'm just going to have to take a little bit more notice. I definitely take a big interest in the basketball these days when it gets to Olympic level and probably World Championship level, because we seem to bat above our size for those, don't we, really?
Yeah, I mean, the World Cup is coming up, and I think we're ranked about 7th in the world, and people think, oh, 7th, you know, that's not in the medal contention or not projected to be. But I mean, that's 7th in the world. You know, there's a lot of countries that have been playing basketball and basketball at a really high level for a lot longer than Australia. You know, people don't sort of like an Italy or a Greece or a Spain, like these countries are, you know, they're really big countries in as far as basketball goes. So the fact that we're on the level and sniffing around a medal, Lithuania is incredible.
Yeah, well, particularly since it is such an international sport, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
It's like tennis and soccer. It's not like, cricket or rugby that are sort of played amongst sort of like about 12 nations and stuff. You really know that you're doing well when you're doing well in a sport that's that international, really.
Yeah, definitely. Al, just finally, so a little bit about myself. So I do these bets, these cartoons for sportsbet.com.au. I do a little drawing. I can't draw. I mean, I love to draw, but I wouldn't say I'm particularly good. I have my certain style, whether it's good or not. Love to do it. I kind of have a rule where once I sit down at a page, if I make a mistake early on, I kind of just, if it's nothing that's terribly, you know, heinous, I sort of have a rule that once I start, I don't stop. Because if I start fiddling too much, I'll end up, you know, screwing up 5 or 6 pages until I get it perfect. I become too perfectionist. Do you kind of have a rule with your drawings or a persona or a philosophy when you're doing your drawings that might be a little unique to you?
I give myself a bit of a deadline. So particularly with these cartoon strips, I used to get very finicky with my caricatures and stuff, and I still probably do. But usually with the caricatures, there's a deadline that I need to meet, so I can only put so much in. And with the cartoon strips, I had to, because you're doing so many of them, you have to cut them back. So I basically did it from the point of view, I just said, well, look, I'll just do this as if I was doing it as a daily strip. You know, they are weekly. And I just said, look, I'll just do, I'm just going, basically going to draw what I need to tell the story. And what I need to, if it's wrong, it's wrong, and I'll change it. But I don't want to have a cartoon strip that's full of extraneous, like nice little drawn trees and stuff in the background and that sort of thing. I basically just whatever I've had the characters, obviously, I don't tend to be a hugely finicky caricaturist. You know, there's a lot of caricaturists and stuff that these days, particularly the digital ones, they can just make these things sing, you know, and the work is just incredible. And I do a little bit of work like that if I get a commission to do to do someone computerized. But I just have my own level where I think I've got enough detail. You know, I mean, I don't really need to be putting in highly finished wrinkles in all the pants. Mm. I don't really need to be. They're not really doing anything to tell the story any more than if I just had the pants sitting there and just with an outline and stuff. So I do, particularly with the cartoon strips, I do try to pare it back to
story.
The minimal amount that I can, but if I've got a little bit more time, I might throw some stuff in. But I am a You know, I do like to just sort of basically put in what in with the caricatures. I put in what the you know, what the client wants, but I don't sort of end up putting tons and tons of stuff in that they haven't asked for. Really, you know, it's basically just You know, I used to love all the cartoons. Like,
That was my next question: like animation and cartoons, moving pictures. What do you like?
As far as animation goes, I love animation and was really keen on it, doing animation at one stage. But it was just basically in those old days, it was so much work doing you know, before the computers came through and stuff, that I just basically sort of gave it away, really. But I used to love all those old, you know, the Warner Brothers cartoons and the Flintstones and all those sort of things. Mm-hmm. They were just, and the early ones, you know, I just sort of find a lot of the animations these days are very, very samey, really, you know, particularly the manga things and stuff. All the characters are all very similar. And whereas I think there was a lot more variety in things in the old days.
I agree. I mean,
you do animation yourself?
I do kind of. So I'll show you my work. I'll show you what I do, and I'll get your impressions on it. I'd love that. I basically draw frames, and I use Final Cut Pro because I do come from a sort of video editing background. So I draw these frames, and I kind of fade them in and out to give the impression of. The impression of movement and a few things and sound, and so the drawings are very basic, but I'll send you what I do. Because my idol is really a guy by the name of Ray Harryhausen. I don't know if you know him. He's a stop motion animator, and so he's someone who, you know, what he did with sort of models, I try to do with pictures. Now that sounds really posh, it's not that sophisticated at all, but that's the goal.
I think there's more, you know, options for doing that sort of thing. I used to do a little bit of cartoon teaching, and I taught a little bit of animation with one-stop things where we just have cars going around racetracks and this sort of stuff, and you know, fairly simple sort of stuff. But I used to just use iMovie and stuff to edit it, and it was a little bit primitive, but
nonetheless,
You know, but I used to love, you know, I've done a couple of little animations, but it's just basically a time factor, really.
With it's me. Just consuming, yeah.
Yeah, it's just finding the time, but it's I think it's going to be a much bigger because of things are improving so much with you know, with computers and stuff. I think that it's going to become a much bigger part of cartooning. I think.
I mean, and for me as well. Like, I mean, I was always a huge Simpsons fan, and when we're talking about sort of draw to your story, or you know, only put in as much information or detail as to serve the story, I think The Simpsons is probably the hallmark of that, especially their early episodes where they were so richly funny but animated, you know, so well for comedy. I think they're really special. Were you a Simpsons fan?
Yes, yeah, and I love The Simpsons and stuff. I'd watch them more if my partner, obviously she wasn't so interested in watching the news. That is right. I love The Simpsons. I went to, when I did my trip over to Canada and stuff, there was a cartoon in I think it was the New York Post, which was Matt Groening was doing his.
That would have been called like the Life and Death or something like that.
And they were these funny little sort of bunny characters.
Yes. This is going to kill me now. I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, Life and Death, that's going to bug me, but no, I don't know the name of it. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And you sort of think, well, where's he's gone to, you know, from that really? It was just like a little cartoon strip, but all the faces were there, you know.
His style. He had a rule that I thought is really good one to impart. He had a rule where his characters should always be recognizable in silhouette. And if you think about those Simpsons characters, if you think about Homer with the way his mouth is and the crop of hair, and obviously Marge with that big thing, and Bart is obviously very recognizable in silhouette with the hair. That's a really good little rule, I think. And even if you think about movies, you know, James Bond is recognizable in silhouette, you know, the pistol up, and the Indiana Jones is another one. So that's a nice rule of his that I think is brilliant. But you were about to say.
I've always, when I sort of teach, doing a cartoon strip, it's obviously it's important for young kids to get that everybody, because you repeat drawing the character, you want to keep it simple. Yep. And you also want to, as you say, make each character obvious, so that, it's obvious what characters saying what from one panel to the next. You know, if one's got a red shirt, even if one's just got a red shirt, one's got a blue shirt, but at least if you've got some simple point of differentiation. And I think you're right about The Simpsons. They're very different sort of characters, aren't they? They all sort of, either one has like really curly hair or something, and they're all sort of very recognisable.
Yeah, even in the most simplest form of silhouette. Al, I'm going to end it there. I think that's great.
Fantastic, Joseph. You're having a great chat.
Yeah, thanks. I really appreciate that. And I'll be in touch. I'd love to send you my stuff and get your thoughts on it, and maybe even be in touch in the future about sort of what's going on with the NBL and caricatures, and maybe do something, because I'm trying to do a bunch of things. Because I did... the way the sports bet thing came about was I listened to another podcast by the NBL, and they told a really funny story. So I made this little animation that's basically just written frames, and they cut in and out and things like that. And from that, sports bet contacted me and said, "Do you want to do it continually?" But the idea of doing that with a bit of stuff and contacting sports people, preferably basketball, but not necessarily, and doing something like that might be really fun. So that's my hope.
I don't know if you know, but there's a guy called who does a strip called Zen Pencils, and his name's he's an Asian guy. I think it's I can't remember, it's Tang or something. But anyways, if you look up Zen Pencils, Zen Pencils, and he writes, he does cartoons for based on I think sort of famous sayings and all that sort of thing. And but he does like a full strip, but he does them in a very vertical format. So I think he's made them for for mobile phones and tablet type reading. So he has the they're quite tall strips and stuff, but he's doing very well with those, apparently.
Yeah. Oh, good on him. Good on him. All right, Al, we'll be in touch. But that was really fun, as I said. Pleasure.
Nice to talk to you.